You are listening to the Leukomania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Leukomania. I am, of course, Pat Leuka, and I am joined once again by one of my frequent collaborators and partner in crime here in the show, Mr. Adam Witt. Welcome back, Adam.
Hey, Pat.
And today we are going to talk about, some books that we were really digging that I think more people should be checking out, one of our Hidden Gems episodes. But before we really dive into that, we're going to talk about the rather controversial big news of the last couple of weeks. By the time you hear this, I'm sure it's kind of calmed down. But I figure we want to kind of say our piece on the new Watchmen announcements, the before Watchmen, rather. And I think some people are really overreacting to it. That's the best way to say it, right? That's the nicest way to say it?
That's certainly a way to put it, yeah. My biggest issue is really, we were discussing it beforehand. Corporations are going to do what they're going to do. They're going to want to make profit off of things they can make profit from. Mm-hmm. And, this is a fish in a barrel situation for them. There are going to be people who are going to pick this upside unseen, Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I think my biggest issue with all of it is obviously we're not going to be able to change what corporations are going to do. Creators are going to do what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. We can't complain about that. You absolutely can complain about it, but it's not going to do anything. The only way you in this situation that you can make a difference is to vote with your wallet,
Exactly.
And that's really the best way to stage your vote. I saw a couple of really earnest comments online, and this is just a point of view that I can't reconcile, that I can't put myself in the shoes of, where people were saying, "Oh, this is disgusting. This is terrible. I'm all in." Mm-hmm. It's like I. What? it was one of those things when I read it where I was just baffled that anyone can kind of take that spot on it. If you think it's disgusting, if this is the diametric opposition of what you want to see in comics, there are so many good comics out there. Mm-hmm. That are worth your money. Go read Watchmen again. Buy the trade instead. Just do something with your wallet that tells them, "I'm going to support good comics and not the ones that I don't like."
I agree, and the thing is, the fact that they went down to that well, called Watchmen, it kind of feels like they've reached the bottom of the barrel here. That they're run out of ideas.
The thing that really scares me about it is the fact that Watchmen is such – it's a perfectly self-contained, circular, front-to-back story.
Yes.
Obviously, there's a lot you can mine with the characters, but a lot of it's already there. So much of it is already there. And this – story-wise, I worry that this will kind of cheapen – the original book, but of course, that's all perspective from person to person. But as it stands, there are so few books that you can point to where it's like, this is a Marvel or DC book that you can read in one shot. That's a really good example of what you can do with superheroes and with this medium.
I agree. And, it's kind of sad because, I guess right when the fervor for the new 52 is dying down, they do this to kind of get more attention again. That's what it feels like to me, and we mentioned, art and commerce, corporations, they exist because they need to make money, and I don't fault, if you're an executive at DC Comics and someone lays down the idea for you to do a Watchmen, prequel, and you have the rights to the characters, as much as I'm against the idea, you do it anyway because you want to keep your job. Morality does not play anything as far as the big business is concerned. And it's disappointing, but at the same time, it is expected. You know, I don't fault anyone for that. You know, I think if anyone is to blame for anything, you know, all the complaining, it's, you know, the people that had, you know, that made Alan Moore sign that contract he did all those years ago. That you know, because, you know, how would he know that they would keep reprinting that book every year and that it would never ever go out of print? So I think those people are solely to blame for this whole thing. I think the creators
Alan Moore isn't doing it any favors either. I mean, yeah. It's so weird how he goes from being this this really interesting ambassador for just kind of like goodwill. Like, if you've ever seen video interviews with him, he's super lucid and confident and really easy to listen to, and usually really easygoing. Like, he appeared at some kind of Occupy protest. I don't remember if it was in the States or out in the UK, but he was like, he was super kind and just really like, it was the sort of person whose side you can get on. And I think that anybody who's read a longer print interview with him would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and the thing is, he did a, there was a Kickstarter campaign recently where, you know, one of the prizes, if you donate $99 or more, you get to do a video chat with Alan Moore. You get to participate in a 2-hour video chat. And apparently he was fun. He was enjoyable. Hell, apparently he was revealed to be a pro wrestling fan, which is some points with me. and you know, I like Alan Moore a lot, and I think I want to side with him, but in the end, again, it's not his fault that things kind of turned into this. But, you know, I think in the situation he's in, I think if I was him, I would just, you know, I mean, that this is me, my thoughts of self-preservation talking here, but, you know, DC's been offering to pay him money, he keeps saying no. Well, I wanted to take some of it, you know. But then again, he's a man of principle, and I applaud him for that. But, you know, he knows that they're not going to give him anything back. He might as well, you know, at least enjoy the fruits of his labors, you know.
No doubt, no yeah. doubt. And another thing that really sucks is how his name as a professional is mm-hmm. kind of getting drugged through the rain. When
yeah.
he's done some amazing comics, you know, you cannot, no matter how the dude looks to the public eye. Drag something like From Hell, like Watchmen, Promethea. I mean, I can literally go on and on and on.
Yeah, he's brilliant. You know, he earns that description. He's brilliant, and he's treated like crap by fans, and, you know, because I mean I've been guilty of making a joke here and there about, you know, about the Snake God thing, but, you know, sometimes you just can't help yourself. But
oh, he's absolutely crazy. Like, yeah. there's no getting around that. But I mean, look at pretty much, all the British Invasion guys. Neil Gaiman writes novels about people getting eaten by vaginas. you know, Warren Ellis is revels in how insane he is. Uh-huh. Grant Morrison. Mm-hmm. That's really all I need to say in that situation. You know, it's the old chestnut about detaching creation from creator.
This is true. But, you know, it's kind of unfortunate that this is all happening. If it was up to me, I would not, if it was my decision to make, I would not have agreed to do those books. And as far as the professionals who are doing it, you know, the creators involved, I don't wish them any ill will, because if I was presented, you know, if I was in that position, I might take the gig, depending on how they're going to compensate me, you know. It's just sad that guys like Brian Azzarello, Adam Hughes, all those guys are getting all kinds of shit from people online.
Yeah, and I think if anything, it was kind of a misfire. I would really have loved, and I'm sure you'd agree with me, I would love to have seen those guys doing more work in the New 52 than on this. But that's it's a Schrodinger's cat thing. You know?
I mean, you think about it though. I mean, come on, do Lee Bermejo and Brian Azzarello doing a Rorschach? It's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah,
you think of it that way, and then you know, Azzarello and J.G. Jones on The Comedian, that's like, I mean, you know, Azzarello has been writing The Comedian for years in 100 Bulls, and he was named Lano over there, and...
Nice.
it's perfect. It writes itself. He's perfect for those characters. And
Darwin Cook with the Minutemen.
Yeah, Darwin. Yeah, he is obviously of that era.
Yeah,
that's the type of man he is. So I have no problem with them doing what they need to do. In the end, you know, if you find it so distasteful, if you don't like it, don't buy anything.
Absolutely.
Just vote with your wallet. Pick up an indie trade or an indie book. Pick up an older book that you thought never got the chance. You know, pick up something that you've always been curious about. Instead of spending, I mean, a 12 issue miniseries spawned like how many of these before Watchmen tie-ins? 6 plus how many characters? 7 characters?
Something like that, yeah.
6 and then 7 times 4. There's over 30, almost about 30 books spawned from a 12 issue miniseries. How does that happen?
That so, speaks to the quality of the work, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, it's going to be. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the sales numbers are on this thing. I mean, I don't normally care for sales numbers, but I'm going to be paying attention.
This is going to be intriguing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to pay attention to this just because I'm going to see how many people actually back up their claims about not picking up these books. And you know what? If you choose to not pick it up, good on you. And you know, get something else that you love, that you think you like, or you know.
At the end of the day, I hope the books are amazing. Like, I mean, yeah. It's not necessarily the sort of thing I'm interested in reading, but I really hope that the people that pick these up are just like taken and blown away with them.
Yeah, and maybe it'll inspire them to, you know, get other people to read the original work or read the work again. You know, that's really the best case scenario as far as anyone who wants to buy these books. But you know, you guys can calm down and relax. You know, that I've been actually the day it was announced, I was always tweeting about how I wish I had a scan of the panel from Inhumans number 1, where Black Bolt says relax. Because that would have been fitting. That would have been fitting on that day. But yeah, it's, you know, I think fandom in general needs to calm down a bit. It is, after all, it's comic books. There are worse things going on in the world right now, and this is our entertainment. There's no need to taint it with all this anger and all this rage, because it's really not worth it, you know.
There's a place for critical discourse. And thinking about things, but when you're just, you know, like you like to say, when you're just shitting on something, it kind of gets pointless, you know. Yeah. It's so easy and it's to be reductive and just, you know, call something meh or shitty, yeah, or whatever it might be. You know, just take the extra dive,
yeah,
and don't be easy.
And seriously, nobody's forcing you to buy any of these books.
Absolutely.
And I can imagine the outrage if someone puts a gun to your head, tells you need to buy Comedia number 1. That would be, you know, that's something else. You know, that's, you know, their outrage is justified. But, you know, the best way to beat these is not by yelling at them, but not by belittling them. God, I feel so bad for DC now when they have panels this year at the cons, because I imagine this is going to come up a few times.
Oh, Christ.
I can only imagine the vitriol, you know, that's going to be thrown their way. But, yeah, I really hope, you know, they, you know, all the creators involved do a great job that you know, that would, you know, but maybe, you know, Alan Moore might, well, who knows, maybe he might try reading one of these things, you know, maybe curiosity gets him, and hopefully he gets to put them down and say, you know what, that wasn't bad. That's you know, hopefully they produce enough work and they treat it with the respect and the reverence that it should, you know, that it should be treated, and I'm pretty sure they will, because I don't think any of these creators, except for one that I'm not going to name, would be, you know, I don't think any of these creators would want to crap on what Alan Moore has built, and hopefully they respect the man. You know, they respect the man enough, I think. So yeah, Watchmen, vote with your wallet, and that's really all there is to it. Let's get to the good stuff now. everything that we're going to talk about today, most of them will be available for our pals over at cheapgraphicnovels.com. And you know, if you want to sample all the goodness we're going to talk about, you can go there. So, Adam, you want to start us off?
Yeah. And this is something that I read just recently. Actually, most of what I'm going to talk about, I lucked into just recently. Like, it's been in kind of an upswing with reading comics. And the first one is The Wild Kingdom by Kevin Huizenga. This is a weird, 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 weird book. I don't think that he does anything that isn't, like, capital W weird. But this goes from being stories about his character Glenn Ganges to wildlife diagrams, and it is just bizarre, but it's got like kind of a hypnotic quality to it. A lot of people compare him and Chris Ware to each other, like the really microscopic kind of style that Chris Ware has.
I can see that.
And I think Huizenga does it better. I know you might get into a comparing apples and oranges situation there, and I can understand that, but I personally prefer what he does. And Wild Kingdom is it's a stunning book that it's done on a very small scale. It's got like cutouts of baseball cards in it. It's really bizarre, but front to back, it's a really cohesive read, which. It may sound like it doesn't make any sense from what I'm saying here, and I can understand that completely because I didn't catch it until maybe my second read through. But you really get something that rewards you for all the effort you put into reading it and all the oh my god, what is this thing you'll be doing as you read it. And I'm really excited for his book Gloriana, which is going to be out in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I always liked Huizenga stuff. I read Curses some time back, and I thought that was a phenomenal book. And he's one of those guys that just keeps getting better over time. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to Gloriana as well. And I need to get a copy of this book. I have not read this yet, so this is something that's on my radar. And you know, like I said, I've liked his work.
Found out he was born like 10 minutes from where I live.
Nice.
Which it's really weird ghetto area, so it's good to know that like somebody from around here went and did something with themselves. So what do you have? What's your pick? Or your first one at least?
My first pick is a G.I. Joe book actually from IDW. It's called Hearts and Minds. It's written by Max Brooks, and author of World War Z, featuring art by Antonio Fuso and Howard Chaykin. So basically, Hearts and Minds is pretty much that. It's this was originally published as a 4-issue miniseries. Each chapter focuses on one Joe character and one Cobra character, and each story is basically a character study for each character. And you basically kind of go through a typical day in the life of, say, Major Blood. And Major Blood, from the comics, or the cartoons rather, as the guy with the eye patch who recites bad combat poetry. But here you find out what he's really all about. When he's not doing stuff for Cobra, he comes home to visit his dad, who's got Alzheimer's or something, and he comes to visit his family, his wife and kids. You get to know what these characters are all about. And the same goes for the Joe characters. They do one thing, and you see them on their daily life, and you see what they're really all about. So it's. It's really interesting, and it kind of gives more insight to all these characters that you see as some of them are stereotypes, some of them are caricatures in the cartoon, and some of them are handled a little better in the comic books. But here you get to see they're more than just ciphers. Even the Cobra, the Cobra infantry troopers, the soldiers got like a solo issue, and you see all the different walks of life that they all came from and how they end up becoming, soldiers for Cobra. So it's very interesting, very cool character studies. This is a really cool set of short stories, really, because you think about it, most G.I. Joe stories are like those long kind of epics, especially from IDW, because I remember the very first storyline in their ongoing Joe series took almost 2 years to come to fruition. Here you get 8 11-page stories, and they're all really well done. They all tell a complete story, and great art by Fuso and Chaykin. So definitely check this out. It's from IDW. It's $25, but you can get it with a discount from our pals at Cheap Graphic Novels. Yeah, I don't know why I keep bringing them up.
yes, I can't imagine why.
Yeah, what's next on your docket?
This you won't be able to find at cheapgraphicnovels.com.
Probably not.
I like to send people like searching into the weird discount bins, like I did with St. Swithin's Day the last time I was on. But this one is like St. Swithin's Day. It's amazing. The Ballad of Dr. Richardson by Paul Pope. I think he did this book when he was like 24, so it predates THB, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wow. Where did you find this?
I just I was at one of the used bookstores here in Chicago. I saw it. I saw Paul Pope's name on it. I was like, yank. I couldn't walk out without it. and it'll set you back $50 like on Amazon or anywhere else. But if you can find it, it follows a character who's he's a college professor. He's kind of disenchanted with his job, and this girl that he meets just at random sends him on this kind of weird counterculture journey. And it's Paul Pope just playing the guitar solo of his life and then wrecking the guitar as he leaves the stage. It's nuts, and it's some of his cleanest work, which I didn't expect. Like, you'd think that his earlier stuff would be sloppier, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But it's super clean. It's cleaner than anything of his that's currently in print, like your 100% and Batman your 100s and all that. It's just super straightforward. There's a lot of Los Bros Hernandez in there. Like, nice. There's a ton of their influence in there. And it's just from front to back, it's a dynamite story. Like, I didn't know how to be in terms of the wavelength of the stories that he writes, but it presages a lot of what he does, a lot of his later work. And I cannot recommend it enough. If you're lucky enough to find it, if you're a fan of Paul Pope's, it's an even if you're not, it's a total must-have.
You kind of see the skeleton of his current style, basically, in this.
Oh, totally. And I never would have put together the dots with the Hernandez brothers being such a big influence on him. But you can really in the faces and just kind of the way he draws gesture, things like that. It's really evident in this, and it's cool to see. Because I think they're an older counterpart that doesn't get enough love, mm-hmm. with comics, and you can it's all over it. It's just plastered on this, and it's a really cool book. I cannot recommend it enough.
Awesome, and it's called
The Ballad of Dr. Richardson.
Awesome. Well, good luck trying to find that.
Now
I'm very curious because I love the Los Brothers Hernandez, and I would love to see I guess Paul Pope's formative style inspired by that. That sounds very interesting to me. If I will need to study for his art, because I don't know the Hernandez brothers are guys that constantly trying to study and trying to figure out, because I could not crack the code and pull off what they do.
But, do you have those big hardcovers of their stuff? The Locas?
Locas,
books?
Yes, and Palomar. Yes.
Yeah, they're so cool.
Yeah, they're amazing. I can't wait. They're going to be in San Diego this year, all three of them.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to get them to sign those books. I'm actually looking into getting all the newer collections of the Love and Rocket stuff. Because those guys are fucking gods, man. They are
absolutely
gods. They're brilliant. Speaking of brilliant, moving on to my next pick. Now, people who listen to this show, you know I've already talked about this, but I have to reiterate, because I love this book so much, and it's one of those books that stays with you. And again, I'm not ashamed to bring it up again. So hopefully you guys know the intensity of my love for this book, and you will pick it up. It's Tale of Sand. It's illustrated by Ramon Perez, based on a lost screenplay by Jim Henson and Jerry Joel. And I mentioned it previously. This is like the next step of this is a game changer as far as the comic storytelling is concerned. At least I feel that way because of the way the way Ramon Perez just tells the story. He makes use of the medium and he makes use of things like color in such a way that it's never been utilized before. You know, it was very surreal. It's very haunting. It's full of a lot. There's a lot of high points and then there's low points. It just captures emotion and storytelling clearly. And even though you don't know exactly what's really going on, because it's kind of a surrealistic story, it really feels like a dream. But it is, that's really the best way to describe it. This is like a dream that you're experiencing alongside the main character, and it is beautiful. It's probably I've said this also before. If this damn thing does not win any awards, I would be really pissed off. I will swear off any award-giving bodies in comics, because this thing should and deserves to win the accolades this year.
Did that come out this year or last?
It came out in limited release. Wow, that's so weird to say that. It came out in limited release at the end of December, and then it came out in wide release in like late January.
That is weird to say.
Yeah, I think they released some. I guess they had a short early run or something. I don't know, but right anyway, on. Arkea was smart in giving this to Ramon Perez. And I'm not the only one who's saying this, by the way, because a lot of other artists I know, especially the guys who tweet a lot, mention this book a lot. They talk about how much they love this book, and it's well deserved. And if you don't care for the story, you can at least just fall in love with that art, and this will make you a lifelong fan of Ramon Perez. And I'm gonna stop now because I might go out of control. this is from Arkea. This is probably the best thing they've ever put out, aside from The Killer, which is a great series of books. Also, definitely give this a look. It's a beautiful. It's the next step up in comic storytelling. You know, and it's clearly a work of pure joy. And there's obviously a lot of work, a lot of love went to every page of this book. And give it a look. It's trust me, you're not going to regret it. And you know what? Screw it. If you buy this book and you don't like it, I will buy it from you. Money back guarantee from me.
The Pat Loki guarantee. Oh yes. Man,
yeah, I love it this book so much. Business. I will do that, but you will have to buy it from our friends, so they can keep track. All right, Adam, your turn.
All right, I apologize in advance if there's a dog barking in the background. My neighbors are jerks, and I can't mute a dog, unfortunately. But let's talk about Young Avengers, the first run.
Oh, this is kind of surprising coming from you. What did you think of it?
I was there when it first came out, and I remember it launched around the same time as New Avengers. You know, the very beginning.
Yeah, I was at the panel when they first announced this, and I remember the crowd kind of booing it.
I saw the preview art, and I was like, "What the fuck is this?" I was like, "This." What? I was just baffled by it. Mm-hmm. And I ended up I don't even think I subscribed to it just because I was buying Avengers stuff. I think I just got it at random and I picked it up and I was blown away. Oh. I was really just kind of like, wow, who is this Alan Heinberg guy and why isn't he writing everything? And it's a book that'll take you by surprise. You wouldn't expect a book with the premise Young Avengers to be any good. I mean, it's entirely new. Most of the characters are new, right?
Yeah, they're all new except for Cassie.
That was what I thought. Yeah, yeah. So they bring in all these new characters who are basically Avengers wannabes, and bring them to the forefront and kind of explain their histories and everything like that. And it ties seamlessly into Marvel history. Everything counts, and the hook that you're given at the end of the first issue will lead you through the subsequent 11 that come after it. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most perfect first issue hooks I've seen. And I think a lot of people missed it on that first run and are hopefully coming back to it. This is another book that whether you're an Avengers fan, somebody who's new to Marvel, just any level of readership with Marvel stuff, it's so worth your time.
Yeah, it also serves as a very nice history lesson to a lot of the Avengers universe, you know, and just what they're all about. And the big reveal, of course, from the end of issue one, the big hook, is really, you know, it's one of the most enjoyable aspects of the book because once again that a certain character is revealed to be someone else or is destined to be someone else. So I'll say. And it really puts it makes the original, you know, the character which is the basis for, you know, this new one, it really makes him even more compelling, and it makes you even want to know. If at first, I mean, for guys like me who really are deep in the lore, it can present itself as a bit of a headache, but it is very interesting. I mean, what another? because, you know, this character is known for, you know, having multiple, you know, aliases, right?
When we're not openly spoiling a 7-year-old book, you know that it's a good hook.
Yeah. I don't want to ruin it because there's still a lot of people who, you know, it is one of those books that, you know, it does have a pretty big fan base, but I don't think enough people are aware of what this book's about. They just, you know,
it was easy to pass over when it first came out.
Yeah.
It was really easy to just kind of overlook.
Yeah. And the writing, you know, Heinberg's writing back, you know, it really felt like the best of what Geoff Johns was doing. You know what I mean? Like, there's some elements of his writing that's similar to you know, Geoff Johns at his best, as far as the characters and interactions are concerned. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the way he introduced characters when he'd bring somebody new in or do a historical flashback, stuff like that. Yeah. Really smacked of Geoff Johns, but the way he does everything is uniquely Heinberg. And for a guy who's written such a small amount of work in comics, like, he's probably got the most unique voice of somebody who has that small of a body of work. It's immediately identifiable as a Heinberg book. It gets to the point where you can pick out a piece of dialogue and go, that's a Heinberg piece of dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, are you referring to the first trade or the first hardcover or the Ultimate Collection?
Specifically the Ultimate Collection.
Okay. Yeah, that is a really cool 12 issues. And there's a one-shot in there too, the special.
Yeah, the annual. And that's got art by Bill Sienkiewicz and Pasquale Ferry and just some amazing dudes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that was a really cool run. I have very fond memories of it, and actually it holds up really well when I reread it. I mean, that book had the disadvantage of having to go through life while all this upheaval was taking place in the Marvel Universe proper.
It was also really heavily delayed, so I think it lost some readership as a result of that.
Yeah, it lost some of that, and like I said, you can't tell when this is supposed to take place within the universe, because it takes place between Disassembled and during House of M, and it's
over the place.
Yeah, and you're trying to figure out where does this fit in, you know? But in the end, it doesn't matter. Just let the story take you to where it's going, and that's all that matters, because, you know, that the story is strong enough to stand on its own. You can read it independently of everything else, and at the same time, it adds to the, you know, to the overall tapestry that is the Marvel Universe.
Totally.
Yeah. So I'll go next. My next pick is also a Marvel book. It's Astonishing X-Men Monstrous. It's written by Daniel Way and illustrated by Jason Pearson and Nick Bradshaw, with some Sarah Pacelli thrown in there. And it's really a fun little story. I mean, Astonishing X-Men, let's be honest, when Joss Whedon left it, it kind of went in the wayside. It became a place for writers like Warren Ellis to tell stories that don't have to be within continuity, or you know, they don't have to worry about fitting in, because the book is known for being very delayed half the time. and it's okay. It's basically giving people, you know, a platform to tell their X-Men story that's independent of what's going on, and then we'll just make it fit later on. Now, this one is kind of set within continuity. It is set in continuity, and Daniel Way picks a very small group of X-Men. He picks four characters. He picks Emma, Cyclops, Armor, and Wolverine. And basically, it's a story that involves giant monsters, and just them having fun with, you know, Monster Island stuff in Japan, and of course they bring in an obscure villain, which again wins me over. They bring in Mentallo. You know,
he
the old S.H.I.E.L.D. villain and, you know, former tag team partner of the Fixer. And it's him and controlling monsters. You got Thing Fang Foom. You got, you know, all the fun stuff is here. And at the same time, you know, they interweave the big monster story with a more personal story involving Armor or Hisako, whatever you want to call her, was her real name. She has her own personal story going on, and the reason for the X-Men being where they are, the story involves something, you know, with her family. So, yeah, this is a lot of fun. I love the art. This is Jason Pearson's most recent work, and I'm really sad that he didn't finish it. We did get to see Sarah Pacelli and the amazing Nick Bradshaw, who has become one of my favorites over the last couple of months. It's a gorgeous book. It's definitely worth it for the art alone, but the story is a lot of fun as well. A lot of the cool, there's a lot of cool Cyclops and Wolverine and Emma Frost moments, and and of course Mentallo kind of becoming a bit of a badass here. Actually, he's really great. I always liked that character. I always thought he was a fun character, and seeing him kind of get the spotlight as an X-Men villain was definitely worth it. So, yeah, give this book a look. It's Astonishing X-Men Monstrous, and if you're not in love with the art, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Is it fair to call a Batman book a hidden gem?
It's like fine. Whatever you think, it's not getting enough love, I think. It works for me. I mean, I just use an X-Men book, for God's sakes.
I guess it's fair. My next pick's Batman City of Crime by David Lapham and Ramon Box.
That book.
It is a dark Batman story.
I'm going to be honest with you, man. I gave up on that book because it was really, really messed up and dark.
Well, that's David Lapham for you. I mean, that's his bread and butter. That's what he does best. But I think this one, once you get through it, it's absolutely worth it. I want to say the trade's still available.
I think
Ramon Box is, of course, in rare form, and it just doing amazing things. And yeah, a girl goes missing at the beginning, and Batman's whole life unravels. Everything about the character just kind of gets laid bare, and David Lapham takes him to some really dark places and kind of upheaves, or, goes tears up some ground, and frames a lot of Batman's his historical context in a different way. It's super dark, but if it's a Batman story that you haven't read, I think it's one of the best. I think by the end of it, you get a different kind of understanding and different kind of perspective on the character. It's very much a story, too, about Gotham City.
Gotham City, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Pat.
Oh, man, no. Sorry. Yeah. But yes, I noticed it from the issues I read. It did, the city is pretty much a character in it too, much like any other Batman story, but more so in this one,
I mean, Batman story is a good handful of them. Just focus on Batman, but this is about the city and what it does to him and what it's done to him constantly. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Maybe I'm just a sucker for David Lapham. I'm surprised you didn't get all the way through it, but.
Yeah, I might give it another try. I mean, I mean, whenever that comes up, I always get mixed reactions from people.
Sure.
And, like I said, it was pretty dark, and to be quite honest, I was never that big of a Ramon Box fan, but,
Really?
There was something about his older work, and around the time that was coming out, it just wasn't working for me.
Okay.
But, I do recognize the skill in his work. I do recognize his ability. I mean, I just felt like it wasn't for me.
Okay.
I'm more than willing to, of course, give it another shot just based on your recommendation, because I didn't know that you'd read this book. So
yeah, and I think too. Once it gets to about the halfway point, I think this is actually a pattern of David Lapham's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like once Stray Bullets gets to about the halfway point, it really kicks into gear. Murder Me Dead, same story. Just like everything, once it gets to about halfway, he really starts throwing everything into place. And if that's about where you left off, you may have missed some of the better stuff of it. And I hate telling people that. I hate when somebody tells me, "Oh, you've got to wait till you get to point X for the book to be any good."
Well, I mean, like I said, other people react to things differently. I mean, I got, I have no problem with people telling me that, because that means it gives me, okay, well, then I left too soon. Yeah. But
yeah, I think if you followed it all the way through, you'd dig it, and maybe you'd have a little bit more appreciation for Ramon Box stuff. I always liked him I liked more of what he was doing in the style of this book than I did of the work that surrounded it. I would agree that he was kind of up and down. With this, I thought he was really consistent.
Yeah, because I think the last exposure I had to his work was on it was one of those post House of M books, Generation M or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, Paul Jenkins one.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of turned off by his work there, to be honest. And sure. Like I said, you know, it might be something. I mean, I might have a better appreciation for it now, but you know, back then, it's I felt differently about it. So I'll give it another look. Your recommendation really holds weight here. So
thank you, sir.
Yes. And this trade collects the entire story, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, cool. Move on to the next book. I actually have a DC book. It's called Chase. It's by J.H. Williams III and Dan Curtis Johnson. And this is about an agent named Cameron Chase. She works for the Department of Extra-Normal Operations, which is the government agency which kind of looks over superhuman activity in the DCU. And it's a really cool book. This is some early J.H. Williams III, which I honestly think I kind of prefer, but that's me.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean he was pretty great back then. I mean he's awesome now. No, don't get me wrong, but I kind of prefer this. I think in this book he doesn't use too many he doesn't use too many of these of his 2-page spreads which he uses a lot currently. There's less of that here. I think this was very focused on the storytelling, and I love his character designs. I love him. He was already doing his his layouts here, his crazy layouts, and he would utilize the occasional spread as well. And this, of course, aside from him, there are actually other creators involved in this book too, because there's a Batman book here that's done by. I think it's issue 550, which is her first appearance, I believe, and written by Doug Munch and Kelly, and illustrated by Kelly Jones. And there's some with Clayface, so that's a nice little bonus in here. There's some really cool stuff here. There's another version of the Suicide Squad in this book, which has a character named Sledge, who looks just like the Juggernaut, except without the helmet. It's kind of weird, but yeah, it's a really nice book. Cameron Chase is a really cool character. I think I'm kind of glad that there's kind of a resurgence in her popularity that she's been appearing in books, and get it, because there's a lot going on in the book, but it's a nice thick book, and you can basically call this a Chase omnibus but without the hardcover treatment. but yeah, it includes issues 1-9 of Chase. It has material. It has Batman 550. There's the DCU secret files. There's all kinds of other secret files here, like short stories, and you also include Chase issue 1,000,000, which I don't think is actually none of this has ever been reprinted before. So definitely get it. And who knows how long this thing is gonna be in print, since this is such a. Such a cult hit character, I guess.
And it's really some of J.H. Williams' best stuff.
Yeah,
the fact that the art alone was overlooked is kind of a shame.
Yeah, there's a lot of great art here too. I mean, aside from him, there's a bunch of other folks here that you may be familiar with now. Like there's art like I mentioned Kelly Hall. I mean, I'm talking about Kelly Jones, but there's also Bob Hall. Charlie Adler has stuff in here. Eric Canetti has something in here. Rick Burchett, Yannick Paquette, Eduardo Barreto, and Greg Scott. They all have stuff in here, so it's worth looking out for. Actually, early Eric Canetti is actually pretty damn good.
Yeah,
and this is the only book where you also see Charlie Adler draw Hal Jordan Green Lantern.
Nice.
Yeah, it actually is. I kind of dig it. Again, there's a lot of all these artists actually show up in here, and you kind of see the formation of their styles, and it's always cool. So yeah, give this a look. It's called Chase. It's a very nice, very thick book. You don't need to read anything else before you read this, because everything you need to know is in this single book. So buy it. It's good.
What's next?
What's next for you?
Oh, yeah, it is my turn.
Yes.
Well, we're probably closing out, so you want to talk about Bucko?
Yeah, Bucko came to the close. Remember a few months back, we talked about Bucko as one of our... first hidden gems, and of course we talked to Jeff Parker about it too.
Yes, sir.
It came to an end. It was a great year of fun stories, and you could, of course, read all of them over at BuckleComics.com. And what are your thoughts of how it ended?
I loved it. I front to back, I think it's a great story. For those of you who don't know and are too lazy to go to the webpage and just check it out, it's about a guy who just wants to have a threesome, and then his life just goes to hell in a bucket afterwards. He finds a dead guy. He's late to a job interview. It's kind of a mess. There are juggalos.
Juggalettes, you mean?
Pardon me. Very important distinction of a juggalette. There's bikes that get jazzed on. I didn't misspeak. There's a little bit of everything, and what the book has, or what the story has, more than anything, is heart. There's just a ton of heart in this story, and Erica Mohan's brilliant.
Yes, she is.
Oh my God, the art in this thing is just incredible. And Jeff Parker's like one of the funniest guys in comics, so
he really
is. You will be wiping tears out of your eyes from laughing hard at this.
Yeah, it's. I'm disappointed that it's over. I'm really sad that it's over. I told him this. I did. You know, Jeff Parker did mention on Twitter that there are plans to collect the book. Collect this as a book, and I will buy that book, no matter how. Where you publish it through or whatever, because it's certainly worth it, and it'd just be nice to flip through this book as a whole. Man, just can't find someone who fixes bikes properly over there. I don't know why I find the bike joke so amusing. It's so Portland, you know.
Very much so. I just love all the octopus references.
Yes. And then I can never get enough of, you know, dudes, people getting boom hugged. This is such a fun webcomic, and it's so different from what other people do, and lots of great characters, really memorable characters. You know, I mean, who would have thought that, you know, I would really enjoy something involving juggalos.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, this is a fantastic webcomic, and if you have a chance, everything is still available over at BuckleComics.com. You can start from the beginning, and you don't need to, wait like we had to wait every few days for a new episode, because it's all here, and it's something both Erica Mohan and Jeff Parker should be proud of, and I think, you know, and clearly they love doing this, because you can just tell from every page that there's some, you know, they really love, and this is something that they always wanted to do, and I hope it's successful enough that they'll do more and maybe do something different, or maybe even revisit the characters. I wouldn't mind that, you know, because they own the characters anyway. They're not getting ripped off or anything like that.
And if you need something in print by Jeff Parker, go buy Mysteriously Unfathomable from our friends at CheapGraphicNovels.com.
Yeah, Mysteriously Unfathomable, or of course read any of his Thunderbolts books, because those are so good.
Yes, sir.
Yes. And also, actually, I want to drop a quick line about another thing that we talked about previously. But I figure we should name drop it again so people check it out. Our buddy Mike Norton just celebrated the first year anniversary of Battle Pug.
Oh yes, awesome!
It's still one of the most entertaining. This one is not ending, thankfully. And the newest page has been the newest page actually was pretty great, and of course it's one of those cliffhangers where you're like, what the hell happened there? How did that happen? But it's great. It's still funny. It's clearly the best work of Mike Norton's career, and he's done a lot of great work, because in here he kind of lets loose. He lets the storytelling do the work, and he's not, you know, and not the illustration. You know what I mean?
Yeah, who would have thought this would be so compelling?
It's like, yeah. this started like a joke or something, wasn't it?
And then I don't know if it was really a joke, but it was just kind of him screwing around.
No. Actually, he made a T-shirt for iFanboy. It started as a T-shirt idea. Then next thing you know, he got egged on into doing it as a webcomic. And my God, it's probably one of the best things he's ever done. You know, I can't get enough of this book. I mean, this webcomic. I hope, and congratulations actually to Mike, because Dark Horse picked it up.
It's going to be awesome to see that.
Dark Horse is going to release it in hopefully in a nice hardcover.
You know, like Akewood or what they're doing with Wondermark.
Yeah.
All of their webcomic reproductions are really awesome.
Yeah. And this is such a great webcomic. If you have not read this, I mean, we recommended this already. Like, damn it, I love it so much, and I don't think enough people are talking about it. Check it out.
When we talk about something twice, you know that you need to read it.
Yeah, I mean, and just look at me and fucking tail of sand, right? give this a look. Again, you will not regret it. It's one of the most fun. One of the most enjoyable things I've read. I mean, every page.
You'll never look at seals the same way.
Yes. Every page, I know, it's pure joy. You know, it's so good. I always thought Mike Norton was a fantastic artist, but man, this really solidified him as a storyteller. So, check it out. It's called Battlepug. Go to battlepug.com. All the webcomics we mentioned, this and, of course, Bucko, will be linked over in the show notes. And most of the books we mentioned, except for the Paul Pope book, can be found
through
our pals at cheapgraphicnovels.com. Adam, where can people find you online?
My Twitter is twitter.com/AdamWitt, WITT. And I have a podcast called Comics Will Break Your Heart. That's it, comicswillbreakyourheart.tumblr.com.
Okay. And, of course, the show will become a part of the – I guess it's safe to announce it now since it's a deal. It is going to be part of the Deliberate Noise Network, and you can subscribe to it through iTunes once everything's set up. So be sure to look for that because it's a fun show. Adam has had great creators on like Paul Hornschmeyer and Tom Scioli, among others. Definitely give that a look, and he's Adam here has become quite the podcaster. I'm very proud. I am proud of this man.
And, you're going to be appearing very soon.
Oh yes, I do. Oh God, I'm not going to talk about myself. I'm not going to listen to me talking.
Pat came on for an episode I did where a handful of people that I really respect talked about comic shops and good and bad comic shop experiences, and Pat has a really cool one that is, even though Pat's going to be so nonchalant about it, I thought it was really cool. So, if you guys get a chance, listen to it. I'm sorry it's taken so long to get on Deliberate Noise, especially if you're listening, Derek. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so lazy.
We need to fix that. Of course, you can find me at my usual spots, of course. I am on about.me/PatLoika. That takes you.
I love how you started forgetting there.
Yeah.
You're like, who am I? Wait a minute.
That point. about.me/PatLoika. And you could also go to my Twitter, twitter.com/PatLoika. Of course, I have my other podcast, which is Pro Wrestling Noise, where me and a bunch of hooligans talk about pro wrestling every week. And we make fun of bad stuff, and we even sing along to some bad theme songs. Oh, God, that was not the best way to sell it. but, yes, we have Pro Wrestling Noise, also part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Go to deliberatenoise.com/wrestling, and you can check that out. Again, iTunes reviews would be appreciated. It gets more people to check out the show. It increases the profile of us as far as iTunes is concerned, and it would be greatly appreciated.
Pat will give you a hug in public.
Oh, man, you will want one of these hugs, because these hugs are pretty great. I don't normally toot my own horn, but, man, I can hug with the best of them.
Pat Loike is the king of hugs.
Yes. And keep an eye out over the next few weeks. We have some very cool guests coming up, including the return of Brian Michael Bendis. We are going to be doing a very special... I think this has never been done before. We're doing a creator's commentary, and I'm going to have Christos Gage and Mike Costa on to talk about G.I. Joe Cobra sometime in the next few weeks. So keep an eye out for that. And, of course, we'll continue to bring in all the guests and all the fun topics that you guys have come to expect from the show. And also there's a new X-Men special episode coming soon, too.
Nice.
So, lots of good stuff, lots of fun stuff. We're kind of mixing it up a bit beyond just the weekly interviews. And, Yeah, there's more, and you'll see it announced. If you follow me on Twitter, you will see all the good stuff announced. So until next week, you guys take it easy, and everybody relax. Yeah. Can't survive another come down day when my spirit has so much pain, so much bitterness, so much bitterness. I need to teach myself to feel again. Somehow I lost the thread of being human, rotting in this bitter. I'm so confused. What is the function of this ego sickness? Uselessly believing my self-hatred whisperings, and I can't deal with mourning at the carcass of my failures any longer. Slipping on my own vomit while tried to call you from a bathroom in Sao Paulo, but I was too drunk to formulate any sort of earthly language. So much bitterness. Other people can say there is a true belief system, but all my life I've been betrayed by my mother's religion. So much bitterness. Just a bell for all your elation. The ink's dripping all over me. The only regret I have is caring. Are we posing? Are we props? Riding the anger till it stops. Father, will we stop today? Father, will we stop? Father, will we stop today? Child, they are wild, and you're a crafty fish, am I? No, my child, they are wild, woman here in the flesh, a catch, am I? How could us be the sunken earth deep beneath the meadow? How could us be the sunken earth deep beneath the ground? No, my child, you lay your head on the monster's spinning. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that.
to sympathize with those that won't fight for themselves. I can't hold both our faces out the flames much longer. The child of our struggle is free. I've